Second case this morning is United States against Arriaga. Counsel for the defense, you may proceed.
Good morning, Chief Judge Efron, honorable members of this court. May I please the court? In this case, the military judge erred by reading the housebreaking instruction because it is not a lesser-included offense of burglary. Under this court's recent decision, United States versus Jones. In addition, the Air Force Court of Criminal Appeals erred when they held that 243 days of post-trial delay was harmless beyond reasonable doubt. Because of the delay, appellant was prejudiced by 169 days of oppressive confinement. I'd like to start off by talking about the lesser-included offense with regard to housebreaking and burglary and discuss the Moreno issue. Housebreaking is no longer a lesser-included offense of the original burglary charge in this case. And the military judge in this case erred by giving that housebreaking instruction. Now, the manual for court-martials does list housebreaking as a lesser-included offense to burglary. However, this court's decision, United States versus Jones, said that that didn't necessarily determine whether or not an offense is a lesser-included offense. When we compare the elements of burglary and housebreaking, they do not line up with respect to the transparency language as articulated in Jones. Specifically, burglary requires that the appellant intend to commit an offense between Articles 118 and 128 of the Code, whereas housebreaking requires the intent to commit any criminal offense. Under the elements test that...
But what about the elements test applied in Alston? Doesn't that at least give you a little wiggle room?
It does... provide a little bit more wiggle room, I agree.
Especially since in a case like this where the only offense discussed, mentioned, dealt with was the offense in question.
Correct.
There was no mention of, am I correct, that there is no record of any mention of any other offense whatsoever?
Correct, Your Honor.
So there was notice.
Well,
there was notice of... of what he had to defend against, right?
With regards to the underlying offense of aggravated sexual assault, Your Honor?
Yeah.
Yes, Your Honor.
Okay.
Counsel,
so where's the problem?
Yeah.
Finish answering Judge Stuckey's question.
The problem, Your Honor, is that the underlying offense being aggravated sexual assault in this case, he was on fair notice of that, but the problem is that he was acquitted of the burglary but found guilty of the housebreaking. The problem being...
Isn't aggravated sexual assault a criminal offense under the code, under 120?
Yes, Your Honor.
Okay. But go ahead.
The evidence in this case presented that there was no question. The question was not whether this was at nighttime, whether this was a dwelling, house. The question in contention was aggravated sexual assault. So if the members believe that he intended to commit aggravated sexual assault in this case, they would have found him guilty of the burglary charge.
Well,
why?
Because that was the only thing contested. There was no doubt the evidence presented in this case showed this was in the nighttime. It was a dwelling house. The only thing that had to be contested in this case was aggravated sexual assault.
Well, counsel, let me ask you a slightly different question. Which element of housebreaking is not alleged in this specification?
That's the problem, Your Honor. And what I just spoke to Judge Stuckey is that while this specific indictment could allege housebreaking, in this particular case, it wouldn't, because the members had to have found that the appellant intended to commit some other crime other than aggravated sexual assault in this case. So he was not on fair notice to defend against whatever that other crime was that he intended to commit.
That's because he was acquitted of that crime?
Correct.
So he couldn't have had the intent. Could he have had the intent and nonetheless been acquitted beyond a reasonable doubt? Aren't they two different things?
They are, and I think that one respect is evidence of this is that he was acquitted of the aggravated sexual assault, but certainly he could have had the intent when he entered to commit aggravated sexual assault, but the problem lies in the fact that he was acquitted of the burglary. If the members believe that he intended to commit aggravated sexual assault when he entered that house, they would have found him guilty of the burglary in this case.
What if the
What if the members...
But I mean, if it was a housebreaking charge, it could have just said with the intent to commit an offense therein, and it wouldn't have to say which offense, would it?
The manual actually says that they have to allege and prove the intent to commit a crime under housebreaking.
What if the intent that they found him guilty of was not aggravated sexual conduct, but a lesser-included offense of that? That is, if that's following your logic, that the only thing that they could do, given the evidence of this case, was determine that he was not guilty of the aggravated offense. Well, given the evidence of this case, could they have determined that he was guilty of a lesser-included offense in terms of his intent with respect to the aggravated conduct?
Certainly they could have, Your Honor, but I guess...
Wouldn't that be the most reasonable conclusion here?
Possibly, Your Honor, but at the same time, maybe they would have found him guilty of the lesser-included offense as well under the actual aggravated sexual assault charge as well. Now, certainly, he doesn't actually have to commit that to be guilty of housebreaking or burglary. It's just the intent. Right. But
to think of the prejudice aspect of Jones, wouldn't there have to be at least some possibility that they could have found him guilty of something that wasn't lesser and that he knew of, for example? You know, they found him guilty of a check offense or a fraud offense or something else or an Article 131 offense.
Correct. Yes, they could have. Yes, Your Honor.
But if that's not an issue, where's the prejudice?
Well, I think that would be an issue, and that goes to what this Court's ruled in Jones and also Medina, where is the appellant has a right to have fair notice to what the prosecution theory that he's going to be convicted on.
And right. But why doesn't this give him notice that he would be subject not only to the intent element with respect to the aggravated offense, but also intent with respect to any other lesser-included offense of that aggravated offense? If that's put on the table, why aren't all the lessers also on the table as well?
Well, I think you're correct, Your Honor. I think that there is the potential that he could have notice of lesser-included offenses, aggravated sexual assault. Yes, Your Honor.
And then where would be the prejudice in this case, in that context?
Well, the prejudice is that we don't know specifically if that's in fact what the members did do.
Right. But was there any evidence at issue in this case other than the intent to commit the aggravated offense or anything lesser than that? Anything else at issue?
Not so much. I know in the Air Force Court tended in their decision to say maybe it was adultery that they found that he intended to commit in this case, potentially another offense.
So but that would be outside the burglary?
That would be outside the burglary. Yes, Your Honor. Now, as a housebreaking is a much broader offense as it contemplates any other crime. And in this case, it's almost reversed where it's housebreaking that adds the additional element as opposed to burglary adding the additional element, which the subject was of Jones. Again, with respect to this, This seemed to create a moving target for appellant in this case to defend against. Under what theory or what offense that he was convicted of for that burglary? And by doing so, the outcome of this situation when housebreaking is read as a lesser included offense almost creates a fatal variance for appellant because he's convicted of something that he wasn't charged with. And that's exactly what happened in this case, Your Honors.
I'm asking you again, what element of housebreaking that he was convicted of wasn't he charged with?
Potentially it was one of those, I'm sorry, can you rephrase or ask the question again, Your Honor?
Yes, you're saying that he was convicted of an offense he wasn't charged with, and I'm asking you again, which element of housebreaking isn't in the specification?
Well, any of those offenses that fall outside of burglary, any offense, like burglary contains offenses between 118 and 128. Housebreaking can contemplate a variety of other crimes. Those are other crimes that he wouldn't be on notice of, that he would have to defend against.
But that isn't my question. My question is, if the elements of housebreaking are that the person did X with the intent to commit an offense therein, and those are the elements, it doesn't say a particular offense, which of those elements isn't in the specification?
Oh, I see what you're saying here. They are. I mean, the specification would allege all the elements of housebreaking in this case.
Yes, so then what are you complaining about?
The complaint about this, Your Honor, is that it created the issue where appellant wasn't on notice of what specifically he had to defend against as far as the underlying crime. And the unique facts of this case being that he was acquitted of the aggravated sexual assault and he was acquitted of the burglary had to lend itself that he was... that the members considered something outside of that indictment. It was a specification that he was found guilty.
Was there any evidence of record of any other offense other than a sexual offense, the underlying offense? I mean, forgery, you know.
There was not.
False official statement, you know.
Correct, no.
Okay, the only thing we're dealing with is a sexual offense, underlying sexual offense.
Correct, as far as...
which he was on notice of.
Yes, but not necessarily the adultery, Your Honor.
Was he charged with adultery?
He was not, Your Honor.
Okay. Was he convicted of adultery?
No, he was not, Your Honor.
Okay.
As I understand your argument, is that the verdict makes it possible that he was convicted of housebreaking with intent to enter for purposes of committing adultery? Is that the essence of it?
No, that's not necessarily my argument. That's one potential scenario that could have had an issue on it. If there was no more questions on the lesser included offenses, could I address the Moreno issue? Again? In this case, 243 days elapsed between the date appellant was sentenced and the date that the convening authority took action in this case.
Where's the prejudice when he's already received very substantial sentence relief?
Your Honor, the prejudice lies in the fact that the Air Force Court, in their opinion, ruled that that under Moreno there was harmless, that there was no other harm in this case. And the prejudice also lies in the fact that his case would have gotten to the Air Force Court of Criminal Appeals quicker had that 243 days.
And they would have given him even more sentence relief?
Potentially, yes, Your Honor.
Well, that's pretty suppositional, isn't it?
It is.
Is that your argument, or is your argument that in light of the sentence relief they gave him, he would have been out of jail soon?
That's exactly it, Your Honor. It was the oppressive.
Well, do we concern ourselves with the application of good time? Isn't that an administrative thing that's beyond the jurisdiction of this court?
It is.
Well, then, where's
your argument based entirely on good time, or is it based on
the argument's not based entirely on good time.
So there's some good time, but there's also time, right?
Exactly.
So what difference does it make, if at all, whether the CCA acted based on sentence appropriateness rather than an error of law?
I don't think it would matter.
The Moreno is focused on, I can't remember the exact language, but is focused on a meritorious claim. And on some level, sentence appropriateness isn't really a meritorious claim. It's the CCA using whatever that authority is, which is subject to other litigation, to do sentence appropriateness. So please pro and con why that changes it.
Well,
one way or the other. I can guess which way you think, but I make the argument.
Certainly, I understand both sides of that. But in this case, appellant had a meritorious claim, whether it was based in sentence severity or it was based on a fact of law. I don't know that Moreno differentiated between the two, but in this case, if his case had gotten to the Air Force Court earlier and they had granted him that relief.
What was his meritorious claim for which he received relief?
Sentence severity, Your Honor.
and you think, but they came back and said, decided the basis of sentence appropriateness, so you think that's cause and effect?
Yes, Your Honor. And the reason being is that they specifically said that they didn't find any harm under Moreno. I think the Air Force Court could have remedied that by saying we considered Moreno in doing this and take that into account, and that's where we came with our 2 years off the sentence, but they didn't do that. They specifically found that there was no harm under Moreno in this case.
But he got the relief anyway.
He did get the relief anyway, but there's the potential for more relief, Your Honor. So, with all the time calculated, and that's including good time, which this court may or may not consider, the appellant came to 169 days of post-trial oppressive confinement credit. And it also alleged anxiety and concern. These are all just various evidences of the
credit. In your view, what relief is he in fact entitled to? Let's say you win. And you're seeking 169 days of confinement credit, is that correct?
Yes, Your Honor.
Was his EAS active, or is he entitled to any pay in any event?
I believe it was, but I don't know for sure, Your Honor, so I won't say. I can supplement that.
Well, I'm not asking for that, but would you agree that the EAS is a relevant fact to, under your theory of this case, it's relevant to know what his EAS was?
Yes, Your Honor. I believe United States v. Moreno set up many different remedies in this case. One would be set aside of the sentence. One could be set aside of punitive discharge.
But you've requested the confinement credit, have you not?
Correct, yes, Your Honor.
Does that get him money?
Yes. Yes, Your Honor. Potentially. Potentially could get him money.
So we don't know. I mean, it may or may not.
It may or may not. It's all going to depend on the Defense Finance and Accounting Service, how they would handle that, Mr. Sharma.
And you're happy with that?
Well, I would request that I see him out of time. If I may.
You can articulate that request.
Under Moreno, and I can supplement my brief, I believe that this court can set aside the punitive discharge based on the prejudice, and that's what the appellant would ask for. But
you didn't ask for that.
Correct, Your Honor.
Thank you.
You have further opportunity on rebuttal.
Thank you, Your Honor.
Counsel for the government.
May it please the Court. I'm Roger Bruce. Colonel Christensen and I have the privilege of representing the United States Air Force in this case. First, housebreaking is a lesser included offense of burglary, and the military judge did not commit error in instructing upon it. Second, when this court conducts its de novo review of the appellant's post-trial delay claim, it will be clear he suffered no due process violation and is entitled to no relief. Subject to the court's questions, I'd like to start with issue two first. The appellant suffered no due process violation when the convening authority took action 123 days
Counsel, where do you get the 123 days? It seems to me that you're taking the 120 days from Moreno and then starting your clock ticking. Is that correct?
Yes, Your Honor. The question is one of delay. And Moreno says that an acceptable standard of time for convening authority to take action is 120 days.
But have
no, it presumes prejudice at that. It presumes unreasonable delay at that point.
It triggers an analysis.
Right, so it doesn't say that's an acceptable timeline. That tells you when it's unacceptable.
Are there any cases from this court or from courts in the federal sector that looked at this that start the clock at the 120-day mark?
Your Honor, I'm not saying the clock started at 120 days.
Well, the clock started when the trial was over. Is that correct?
That is correct.
We're all in agreement then that it takes. We have this three-month period, and you don't want us to count that as far as the length of delay between the trial and the CCA action.
Your Honor, we don't want you to count every single day from trial to CCA action.
Well, then why are we talking about 123 days then?
Because that's the period of time by which the convening authority exceeded this court's standard in Moreno. And that doesn't end the analysis. It triggers the analysis, and that's
well, what it does. It does several things. It triggers the analysis, but it also defines the length of time from trial to receipt at the CCA.
Yes, Your Honor.
And that's what we look at for the length of that time. Now, that doesn't go to whether it's reasonable or unreasonable. That comes in the second prong, when the government comes in and gives their explanations for it.
Yes, Your Honor. I think there still needs to be a qualitative assessment as to that length of time. And when you compare what happened in this case with all the other cases that this court has ruled upon, there's a qualitative difference between those two. That's the only point I'm trying to make.
Counsel, you don't disagree that the time at issue is 243 days?
I do not dispute that, Your Honor.
And I think you ought to direct your arguments to 243 days rather than 120.
Your Honor, I'd like to move straight to prejudice because that's what this case is all about. Because the record in our brief have addressed the other factors, length of delay, reasons of delay, and his failure to assert a speedy post-trial review, prejudice really is the more interesting question here today. Appellant cannot prevail upon the prejudice prong. He claims he suffered oppressive incarceration and anxiety attacks and panic attacks related to sex offender registration as a result of the convening authorities.
Focus on the incarceration.
Yes, Your Honor. He's mistaken on both points. Yes, Your Honor.
Is there a factual disagreement or a disagreement over whatever occurred being oppressive? So the CCA awarded him 2 years appropriateness relief. And does the government agree or not agree, not with respect to the day count, but with the general concept that had that relief shown up X amount of time sooner, he would have been entitled to get out of jail sooner?
Well, Your Honor, I think if I understand your question correctly, when you look at oppressive incarceration, you have to look at what this court said in Moreno, which was based upon what the Fifth Circuit said in Ruark and what the Ninth Circuit said in Coe. And I think that this is one of five reasons why he can't.
Well, let me try it again then, though. At the time the CCA issued its opinion and changed his confinement from 4 years to 2 years.
Yes, Your Honor.
Was he immediately eligible to be released from confinement?
Yes, Your Honor.
Okay.
Yes, Your Honor.
Do you agree with that fact?
I agree with that, absolutely.
So then the question, do you agree as well then that the legal question presented is whether any overage, trying to choose a neutral term,
yes, Your Honor,
whether that constitutes oppressive incarceration?
That's exactly right.
Fair enough. And now you're going to tell us why it doesn't.
Yes, Your Honor.
Okay, but at least we're focusing on the fact.
Absolutely agree. Okay. Absolutely agreed. And there are at least five reasons why he did not suffer oppressive incarceration in this case. First, the government notes that the appellant himself subjectively did not think that 3 years of confinement was oppressive. He thought 3 years was a reasonable period of his sentence based on his crimes as contained in his gross defend submission to the Air Force Court. And gross defend, of course, is his personal subjective belief about his sentence. And he told the Air Force Court, please reduce my confinement from 4 years to three, a reduction of just 1 year.
And did he say that's because that's what I deserve, or did he say, or do we not know whether he was making a tactical call as to that it was more advantageous, more likely to result in relief if he said 1 year rather than take away my entire sentence, thank you in advance?
Your Honor, we don't know. He submitted a 67-word gross defend request. So
it's your inference that represents his view as to what he deserved.
And I think it's a fair one at that, Your Honor.
But it is inference rather than you're not quoting him when you say,
but a fair inference is to suggest that if he had thought he should have had more than 1 year reduction, he certainly would have asked for it, and he did not.
Counsel, I'm not clear on that argument. If he could have been released earlier, if the case had gotten to the CCA earlier, what difference does it make what he asked for?
Well, the question, Your Honor, is prejudice is whether it was oppressive incarceration or not. And we believe that his subjective interpretation of his sentence is a relevant factor, one of just several, but a relevant factor for this court to consider.
So it's your view that he was happy to be in confinement, not you wouldn't say it that way, for up to 3 years, and that anything that would have gotten him out earlier doesn't constitute oppressive confinement because he was under the mindset that he'd be there for 3 years. Is that the gist of the argument?
Yes, Your Honor. The second factor is we would ask the court to peel back Moreno itself. When you see the oppressive incarceration factor in Moreno is based on the Fifth Circuit's Roark decision, Ninth Circuit's Coe case. The predicate fact in both Roark and Coe is that the appellant's conviction must be reversed for there to be oppressive incarceration. In Roark, the court said, quote, "Moreover, prejudice to the defendant is clearly present when, after a substantial delay in awaiting an appeal, his conviction is reversed and the state is allowed to retry him." But even more to the point, the Fifth Circuit said, "The cancerous malady of delay which haunts our judicial system by postponing the rectification of wrong and the vindication of those unjustly convicted must be exercised from the judicial process at every stage." Coe also said as to oppressive incarceration, quote, "The incarceration would be unjustified and thus oppressive were the appellate court to find Coe's conviction improper. If it affirms the conviction, however, the incarceration will have been..."
Did either of those cases address sentencing errors?
No, they did not, Your Honor.
Then why can't we take that into account in assessing their relationship to Moreno?
Well, Your Honor, this court relied upon both Roark and Coe in reaching its decision in Moreno, where this court reversed a conviction in that case as well. We're not aware of any case out there at all that says sentence appropriateness is an appropriate factor to equate to oppressive incarceration.
So it's your view that in the Article III courts, if there's a sentencing error, that is irrelevant with respect to oppressive incarceration, even if the sentencing error results in lengthy confinement that would be illegal when the underlying conviction is upheld?
Well, Your Honor, the sentence is not illegal under Article 66.
That's not my point. If we're looking at a parallel to what the Article III courts do, they are looking at sentencing errors. They have the sentencing guidelines, and they apply them. Even though they're so-called non-mandatory now, they have to go through a whole process with them. If they are reversed by a superior court, and that superior court determines that the sentence is illegal,
yes, Your Honor,
then what case would stand for the proposition that that determination on the part of the appellate court would not be a triggering factor with respect to prejudice in an oppressive incarceration case?
I guess the point I'm making, it wasn't a factor in the Article III court's analysis, but more importantly, it wasn't a factor in this decision, this court's decision in Moreno. It was the conviction itself that was the predicate for oppressive incarceration that is simply absent in this case.
Would you consider the sentence reduction in this case substantive relief?
I'm not sure how to define substantive relief. I know it's not an illegal conviction. I know it's not an illegal sentence. It is, in fact, I think this court defined what the Air Force Court did quite nicely in the Tardif case, if I can refer to Tardif, where this court said, "We've consistently recognized the broad power of a court of criminal appeals to, quote, moot claims of prejudice by affirming only that part of the sentence that the court found to be appropriate." Appellant's suggestion that the Air Force Court, in mooting his claim of prejudice under Article 66, caused prejudice. In our mind, that just can't make sense. Mooting prejudice causes prejudice. We just can't see how that could possibly.
Counsel, my understanding that that's not the defense argument in this case.
Well, but that's
as I understood the defense argument in this case, it was that the lower court did not assert that it was taking this action to moot a claim of prejudice.
Your Honor, that's the logical extension of what they're asking this court to do today. They're asking you to extend Moreno to a place it's never gone before, and that is to say that sentence appropriateness is a sufficient predicate for oppressive incarceration. Moreno itself, as this court said, was intended to deter unreasonable post-trial processing. And frankly, under the facts of this case, there isn't a good reason to extend Moreno into previously uncharted territory.
Well, let's take a little different tact on this, and let's say that the delay in this case was significant. Let's say that it took 5 years to get to the CCA, and let's say that once it got to this, and that there was a lengthy sentence, and that once it got there, the CCA looked at the sentence and said that it was inappropriately severe and reduced the sentence. But in doing that, this guy had spent 3 years incarcerated that had that appeal got there earlier, he would have been released earlier. Now, is that oppressive, 3 years? Or, I mean, how, in your view, there can never be oppressive incarceration if it is a sentence relief at the CCA?
Certainly, Your Honor, those would be more difficult facts to address. But nevertheless...
Difficult just because of the length?
Difficult just because of the length, but nevertheless, when you focus on was there an improper conviction, was there an illegal sentence, and the answer is clearly no under those circumstances, do we really need to go that extra step and extend Moreno to sentence appropriateness?
But from the effect, the oppressive effect on a individual who is incarcerated, and that's what we're looking at here, or at least I think that's what we're looking at, how does it matter what triggered that, whether it was an illegal sentence or sentence relief or turning over the conviction? Oppression seems to be oppression once you're in jail and you shouldn't be.
And that's why we go back to his subjective belief, because in his subjective mind, 3 years was a reasonable period of time. I'm not saying he was happy to be in jail for 3 years, but he clearly had an opportunity to say, no, Air Force Court, 2 years is reasonable.
Counsel, whatever he thought was reasonable, the CCA... made its determination as to what was reasonable. Now, if your argument is that they were aware of the fact that he was claiming a reasonable post-trial delay and may have factored that into their sentence appropriateness,
yes, Your Honor.
That's one argument. But to say that if your argument is it doesn't matter that he was in jail longer than he should have been and it never should matter, then that's a different argument. And I think that what you're saying the appellant is arguing is not what I'm hearing them argue.
Your Honor, the only point I want to make today is he did not suffer prejudice as defined previously by this court. He cannot meet that factor. And we believe the other three factors are augured in the favor of the government. And when this court does a de novo review and balances all four factors, it should come to the conclusion that there was no due process violation. I'm honing in only on the prejudice factor, but when you balance all four, we do not believe that he can meet the burden set forth in Moreno to establish his claim. We also asked the court to look at the entire time it needed to process appellant's case from trial date to the date of the CCA decision. It took the government 617 total days from the date of the trial to the CCA decision. Yet under Moreno, the government meets and exceeds the overall standard when it processes a case within 695 days. We don't see how appellant could possibly establish prejudice under Moreno when the government beat the Moreno total standard by 78 days. There's simply not a nexus between the convening authority delay that he asserts and any actual harm that he suffered.
So is it the government's position that the convening authority's delay is never prejudicial so long as the total comes in within the total of convening authority plus CCA action?
Well, Your Honor, that's an interesting question. Is the focus of Moreno and the convening authority's action based on whether or not he suffered any kind of harm as to his clemency rights? If that's the case, look at the record. There's no allegation that he didn't get an opportunity to submit clemency. The convening authority even granted him some relief as to the forfeitures. So if you look at just the delay that the convening authority caused and whether it had any impact on what the convening authority did, we think the appellant loses.
But I think it's a question of whether the convening authority's delay has an impact on what the Court of Criminal Appeals did. And if the Court of Criminal Appeals has given whatever we would call qualifying relief, if you want to limit it to a conviction case, that's fine. Then... as I understand your argument, is it doesn't matter even if that, so long as the CCA acts within the total period of time that both the convening authority and the CCA have to act, even though an earlier action by the CCA would have given meaningful relief to the individual.
Yes, Your Honor, we don't think he can make a valid argument whether you focus on the impact of clemency or whether you the impact of the entire processing of the case when the government meets the standards that this court articulated and actually exceeds it by 78 days. This case is nothing
like... Counsel, just to be careful. When you say the standards that this court established, they were not standards, aspirational standards. They were standards that there was a presumption of prejudice. Do you see what I'm saying? I mean, those are two different things. I mean, this court, I don't think, said in Moreno, everyone please try and get your case done within 695 days. I think that it said if it's not done within 695 days, there's a presumption of error.
Yes, Your Honor, and then we would have a debate about whether there was prejudice or not. That's what I believe Moreno stands for. And when we beat that standard by 78 days, we just don't see how he can make the nexus connection between that delay by the convening authority and what the government did overall in his case. Whether you look at the impact on clemency or the impact of the entire processing of the case, we just don't see how he can make his nexus argument.
So, in other words, the standard for convening authority's action is irrelevant unless it somehow pertains specifically what the convening authority did. Your view is that the court did not establish a time period for the convening authority's action in order to ensure prompt action by the CCA. But instead, only focus that presumption of prejudice if the convening authority's action somehow relates to the delay, somehow relates to the convening authority's action.
Your Honor, I don't think this court clearly defined in Moreno how it was going to attribute the three different standards. I don't think that's clear in the case. And again, our position is, under the facts of this case, there isn't a good justification to extend Moreno. I see my time is down to about a minute 40. May I briefly address issue one?
Yeah. Why don't you try addressing, focus first on the question of adultery. That is, if there's a possibility that the intent that the members found was intent to commit adultery, how does that affect this effect?
Your Honor, Your Honor. I don't recall the Air Force Court saying anything about adultery.
Well, whether they did or not. Let's assume that that's raised by the evidence in this case.
There's no evidence that they had sexual intercourse. So I think adultery is a red herring, Your Honor. I don't see how it's.
But if we're talking about the intent at the point to enter, if he had an intent to enter and engage in the sexual activity he engaged in, why couldn't the members have found that he had intent to enter with respect
that
to
would be
sexual
a Jones
intercourse,
problem, Your Honor? That would be a Jones problem. That's not present in this record. Yes, Your Honor. Alston's indictment test is the proper test to resolve this LIO question, but we think our best argument is even more basic than that. As the Air Force Court found, appellant presented evidence that a breaking did not occur. So the judge was required to give the LIO. Appellant did not object. This court in Webb held the intent that must be proved for housebreaking is the intent listed in the specification, not just the intent to commit any specification, not any criminal offense. The spec lists aggravated sexual assault as the underlying offense. The military judge only instructed upon aggravated sexual assault as the underlying offense for both burglary and housebreaking, clearly in the record. So the intent element of burglary and housebreaking were exactly the same. Exactly the same. Under Alston and Webb, the judge committed no error when instructing on the LIO. Both elements of housebreaking were fully included in the elements of burglary. That's beyond debate, in our opinion. It's also listed as an LIO, which is persuasive authority. I see that my time has expired. May I briefly conclude?
You may.
Counsel, even leaving the indictment aside, I mean, can you commit burglary without committing every element of housebreaking?
Yes, Your Honor.
You can? When? How? How can you commit burglary without having also committed housebreaking?
I'm sorry. I misunderstood your question. No, you can't.
Just based on an elements test.
I'm sorry?
Based on the elements test, which happens to be mirrored in the specification in this case.
Absolutely. In committing one, he committed the other. Absolutely. I'm sorry I misunderstood your question. The military judge committed no error in instructing upon the LIO of housebreaking. Appellant's right, timely. Post-trial processing was not violated. His conviction and sentence should be approved. Thank you.
Thank you, counsel. Does the defense have a rebuttal?
Yes, Your Honor.
Counsel, I have a question to ask you about the CCA's action. In this case, the CCA not only gave sentence relief in terms of the sentence that it deemed appropriate, but it did that in the context of being aware of this issue of the alleged post-trial delay, and also being aware of the pretrial confinement credit. Under those circumstances, what do we make of their determination that the sentence was appropriate?
Your Honor, the only thing I can speak to with that is that they specifically said in their opinion that they found under the Moreno, the post-trial delay, that there was the error was harmless. So it would tend to lend itself that they considered any of that as a post-trial trial stuff irrelevant because it was harmless in that case. I think they could have corrected it better if they would have said specifically, you know.
But they presumably, is it your position that we can presume that they knew or that they didn't know that this was going to result in him having been in confinement for 51 days longer than he otherwise would have been?
I think we could presume that they didn't know.
That they didn't know?
Correct, Your Honor.
And what do we base that presumption on, given the fact that they made a point of saying that they weren't disturbing the pretrial confinement credit? And that they knew what amount of time he was sentenced to.
Right. And again, it's hard for me to articulate that. You know, all I can say is that the reason being is that they held that there was no prejudice under Moreno, that there was no prejudice there, and that any error was harmless. So it seemed to lend itself that they considered it.
In terms of your. As I take it, you're saying that the prejudice is that but for the delay, that it would have gotten to the CCA quicker and it would have been decided quicker and he wouldn't have spent the time in confinement. What do we base, other than speculation, what do we base that on? In terms of, do we have CCA processing times, time from the submission of briefs to decisions?
Right. Certainly there's a lot of different factors in that timetable, and I can't point to any one specific time period. I guess just from the totality of all the circumstances in this case, and the fact that, yes, Your Honor, that if it had gotten to them, they would have granted relief earlier. One point I forgot to address, if I just briefly could, and this is in regards to the lesser included offense, is when the military judge instructed the members. He didn't, when he read the instruction, he didn't allege any certain offense for the housebreaking. He just said they have the intent to commit any criminal offense. Now, he did do in his oral instructions, he made brief reference to aggravated sexual assault, but in the same breath, he said any criminal offense three times.
Well, can you commit burglary without having committed housebreaking? I mean, I understand that you can commit housebreaking without committing burglary, but that's not the test. In order to commit burglary, don't you have to also have committed every element of housebreaking?
Yes, Your Honor. Yes, Your Honor.
So how is that? How is this a Jones problem?
Well, the problem is, again, the fair notice, the fact that those other offenses, any other crime and housebreaking, seem to fall outside of that elements test that was articulated in Jones. I mean, it's a loose analogy, but similar to Jones, it could be considered that all murders are prejudicial to the good order of discipline, but they're not necessarily going to be prejudicial to the good order of discipline, or they're not necessarily going to be a lesser included offense to murder.
You may briefly conclude, unless there are further questions.
Yes, Your Honor. Under this court's ruling in United States, Jones, appellant respectfully asks that this court no longer consider housebreaking lesser included offense of burglary, and it was error for the military to instruct on that instruction. In addition, appellant was prejudiced by the erroneous instructions in that the members found him guilty of the housebreaking. Appellant was also prejudiced by 169 days of prison confinement due to the post-trial delay in his case. Thank you, Your Honor.
Thank you, counsel. We thank both counsel for your presentation today. The case is now submitted, and the court will be in recess until 10:40 a.m.